Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone, alongside Carissa Cruz, President, CEO of The Wine Growers, here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
And now that it's August 30th, I'm like closing out my birthday month.
Oh, no. All right, how many more days do you have to talk about it?
Like, it's coming to a finale here. Speaking of August, we started the month with Somm Journal hosting sommeliers, and we're essentially not this weekend, but the following, we will be hosting a number of 15 sommeliers with Guild Somm. So we are in full hosting mode in Sonoma County. It's kind of like in the winter, spring, we go out to the world with Sonoma County wine and wine partners and growers, and then, you know, people love coming to Sonoma County July, August, September, October, when it's beautiful and the weather's perfect and it's harvest time. So
yeah,
we're all about hosting these days.
And Somms want to get out of their, you know, indoor environments.
No, and it's great. And we really, you know, we kind of moved away from the model of bringing folks out during harvest because it is a little bit of a burden on our growers and winemakers because they're so busy. But really, when you're, especially on the grape growing side, when you're really trying to educate folks about what it takes to be a farmer and, you know, be in viticulture and grow wine grapes, there's no better way to do it than to actually get folks out in the vineyard during harvest and to see the crews working, to try harvesting themselves, to go to the crush pad and see the grapes come in and then what happens there, blend, all of those things. And so we realized when we kind of moved it out of harvest season that we were really losing a touch point and a really important touch point with folks. Mm-hmm. So we're back hosting two Somm camps in September and a consumer grape camp at the end of September.
Who do you think is going to work harder?
Consumers.
Mm-hmm. Probably so.
I mean, I feel like,
they stay up. They don't stay up as late.
I was going to say, there's less going back to the hotel or hitting the late night scene on the consumer side, where I think the Somms just love to get together and drink.
Right. Well, I guess there's some benefit if they stay up until 3 and then you put them to work around 4.
Yeah, don't
you know,
go to bed at
like
all.
Just make sure they eat some burritos in between or
roll
something.
Roll through.
Yeah. Okay. A new workforce for you.
I know. It is great, though, and it's so eye-opening when you actually watch the professionals harvest. Like, how fast they go, the precision in it, just, like, how fun it is. I mean, I know when I've been out in the middle of the night with the crews, they're, you know, singing and, like, you know, harping at each other, a little ch-ch-ch-ch out mm-hmm. in the vineyards, and it's really fun. And what was super fascinating when we had Somm Journal folks in, the Somms through Somm Journal in at the beginning of the month, there was one guy, I think he said he had been in the business, like, selling wine for 20-some years, had never been in a vineyard.
Yeah, which is just sad.
Mind-blowing. It's
really
sad.
It's
like, it's time to
get
really
out there.
Connected to your work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was so appreciative. We sent him on our truck talks, which we always do, and we'll do with both groups that are coming in as well. But out with the farmers.
Okay, well, we're going to talk to a farmer very soon when we come back on The Good Stuff with our guest, Shelley Raffinelli. Joining us on today's Good Stuff, we are in studio with our guest, Shelley Raffinelli, winemaker, managing partner at A. Raffinelli Winery. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me today.
We've got a little bit of the case of the sillies, so we're going to try to keep it together. You've brought some wine that might help mellow
us. I think that's
gonna
help.
We're going to find out. Carissa might start twitching if it doesn't get open soon. But we really want to start at the beginning, which for the Raffinelli family is a long time ago. So give us a little bit of the background of the Raffinelli family in Sonoma County.
Yeah, so we've been here farming for a little over 100 years now.
Ding, 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 ding.
I know.
Part of the Country Club.
Just
saying.
Yay.
It was awesome. But yeah, so we have a really special story, like so many other family wineries here in Sonoma County. But it really is nice to take it back to my great-grandparents and really my great-grandmother. She was quite the pioneer.
Nice.
She's from Lucca, or from Orentano, which is a small town outside of Lucca in Italy. and she came from a family that grew grapes and made wine. She had two brothers, and kind of Italian custom was everything was going to go to the sons. Mm-hmm. She decided in 1903, at the age of 19, to leave her family Incredible. In Italy and travel to America. So she made her way to Ellis Island and then out to the West Coast to San Francisco. Now, my great-grandfather came from the island of Elba. Different story, not anything to do with wines or vineyards. And he had landed in Norfolk, Virginia, decided that the winters there were way too cold, you know, coming from Italy, yes. and made his way out to the West Coast. They met a couple years later in San Francisco with my friends, got married, and started a family. My great-grandmother was a country girl, so, you know, after the earthquake and everything, she really wanted to move to the country and raise her family in the country. So, like yeah. so many other Italian immigrants at the time, they discovered Sonoma County, very reminiscent of their homeland.
Yeah.
And she made her way into Hillsborough, discovered Hillsborough, started sourcing some grapes, taking them back to the city, making some wine. Found property where the Hillsborough High School is today.
Oh my God.
And that was actually the first vineyards and orchards and the first bonded winery site.
Amazing. So what was her last name?
Tanetti. Letizia Tanetti.
Letizia Tanetti.
Okay. Incredible.
I mean, I was just thinking, like, how brave it was for folks to just pack up their... I mean, I think about just the trepidation sometimes of just packing for a trip across the country, you know, or a trip down south, you know, and all of a sudden you're like, to actually think about moving your whole life at a young age to a place you've never been. I mean, I just...
At that
I'm in
age.
Awe. Yeah. I'm in awe of all those families that took that risk.
Yeah. And well, and especially people. All the way to the West Coast.
Yeah.
I mean, to the East Coast was one thing, getting to Ellis Island, and then if you had other family in New York or wherever, like, maybe that made sense. But then she, I mean, it's like a whole other...
I was 19, I was in college, and that was only Central Coast. I didn't make it that far. And I can't even imagine being that brave. Yeah.
And not actually
making that way up.
Picture where you're going to end up. I mean, right? Like when we make decisions of going to college, you probably visited. You know what it looks like.
What you knew what you were stepping into.
You
had friends going, and
totally.
You knew people.
Yeah, I think that's amazing.
So how did they make a living in San Francisco? Were they weren't doing wine yet, right?
No. So initially, she got a job at a cigar factory.
Amazing.
And so she was working in a cigar factory. Now, my great-grandfather was a carpenter by trade. So, of course, after the earthquake, he had plenty of business.
Yeah.
He was instrumental in helping to rebuild the Fairmont on Nob Hill.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful.
Which is a little sentimental for our family. So every time we go to San Francisco, we stay at the Fairmont.
Course.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
And then he used the scrap lumber to build his own house in San Francisco. Wow. And so, you know, they had started a family. They had three kids, two sons and one daughter. And my grandfather, Americo, first generation, born in America, hence the name, was the one who was wanting to take over, but... He was the one who was interested in carrying on the family business.
Doing agriculture. Okay.
Staying in,
So what was his era? Was it pre-prohibition or did he sort of hit timing?
Yeah. So when he raised in Hillsborough, more or less, you know, growing up with the orchards and the vineyards, he actually, being that middle child, he wanted to follow in their footsteps. And he started looking for his own property, and that's when they moved to Dry Creek Valley. And that's where we are today. So he found the property that we still reside on, have the winery and a lot of vineyards planted too. But initially, it was all prune orchards.
Yeah.
And so he was actually doing prunes. Mm-hmm. So there was this time period when my great-grandparents retired, and, you know, prohibition had run its course, and prunes and pears were very popular, but then that market, you know, diminished. Mm. And then it was like, okay, what do? We start pulling out these prune trees and replanting to vineyard. So his role was, you know, to make that transition, back into, planting vineyards. And
another kind of common story, right?
Exactly.
Sonoma County, it's sort of...
And getting another bond on another facility at a location, not that far away, but out in the valley.
Interesting.
who were some of his contemporaries? I mean, did he, like, the neighboring properties, did he have people that he could collaborate with, learn from, or was he really just kind of one of the leaders?
They were all very close-knit back then. It was kind of like everyone knew each other. Yeah. You were all neighbors. You all helped each other. You knew properties and you helped other people that were coming into the valley purchase property. You know, like Dry Creek Vineyards has great story of how they started in the valley. But they all worked together, and it was great to see that tight-knit community out there. Looking to see what was going to work, and you know, the slow process of rebuilding it to grapes and then wineries and then, you know, building a brand again.
Yeah, amazing. I have such a hard time picturing what Healdsburg would have been like back in that era.
Right, yeah.
I mean, let alone, I mean, even 50 years ago, Healdsburg was a very different place 20 years ago. So, but like in your grandfather's era, like, how interesting. And Dry Creek, I mean, I would imagine Dry Creek still looks relatively similar.
The same.
I mean, it's still so agriculture based.
It's a very unique valley. It's not a very big appellation, but I've born and raised there. I remember, you know, riding my bike down West Dry Creek Road from the house I lived in to my grandpa's house, which was only like a mile and a half down the road, riding my horses through the vineyard down to Dry Creek looking for swimming holes because that was pre Lake Sonoma.
Yeah.
But it hasn't really changed a whole lot. If anything, it looks more beautiful than it did back then. It's probably a little bit more populated, a little bit busier, but life is busier. And it's a really unique place to grow up and raise a family.
So your grandfather, then it's the next generation, are your parents?
My parents, Dave and Patty Raffinelli.
All right. So what was kind of what did they start to think about doing differently?
Well, my dad, he had a brother and a sister. He, again, like my grandfather, he was interested in carrying on the business. He went to Oregon State initially for crop science, and then he finished up at UC Davis. And he worked for a couple other wineries in the valley before coming back to take over after my grandfather's untimely death. He passed away at a fairly young age. So it really wasn't in the plans right away.
Right.
My dad really was... A. Raffinelli at that time under my grandfather really couldn't support more than one family. And so he was working at, you know, another winery, general manager at Lambert Bridge Winery, developing and helping, you know, the owners with their wine program and their all their grape growing. But when my grandfather passed away, they stepped right in to carry on the family business. And they were really instrumental in getting the brand recognized and doing a little bit more of the marketing. They started a mailing list, and that was the model that was so successful for us for so long. It started with people, you know, driving down the road. There was no gate on the property. You know, Dry Creek was undiscovered at the time, and people would drop in and sign the guest book, and then they would be mailed out or release offering, you know, months later. And so they really, you know, moved the brand into restaurants and got a mailing list going, and to a point where, you know, it was like, oh, A. Raffinelli Winery, Zinfandel, Dry Creek Valley, Sonoma County all went hand in hand and really created demand for
what
the wine.
What year did they start the mailing list?
1989.
Wow.
We still have that guest book.
Incredible.
That's awesome.
And how many people, you know, signed on the first kind of go? Do you remember? Like, I mean, because that's some pretty impactful thing.
I mean, the book is not that big. I don't think they'd have 500 names in it. You know, probably 300 names. And how long it took to get 300 names signed
just
up?
Popping, you know, in.
But
was a while. So, I mean, it took time to build up, you know, that list and that customer loyalty and the brand.
Those relationships.
It took a while. Yeah, it didn't happen overnight.
No, for sure. Do you still have people from that 1989 book that are customers?
A few, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
They're like gold.
I know.
Like,
they're far and few, but there is still a few left.
Yeah. So that personal connection, I think, was probably a very, you know, a big part of your success was yes. people really felt like they were part of your family.
Yeah, we didn't advertise. My parents didn't travel across the country showcasing the wines. People had to kind of, you know, discover mm-hmm. us. And when they did walk in, they got the time. They got the attention. They got the story. And they got that with my grandfather a little bit, too. But that was very important, is to make the connection mm-hmm. and yeah. carry that connection on.
Right, yeah.
Is a big deal.
So the initial plantings were Zinfandel. I mean, that is kind of what Raffinelli is so well known for. But you grow a lot of other grapes and make a lot of other wines. Was that a gradual evolution?
Yes. My grandfather had planted Zinfandel, and then he also had Gamay Beaujolais. He Lovely. Liked a light red at lunchtime.
Of course.
Yeah. Italian tradition. You mm-hmm. know, he's come in and have a good lunch. My dad has taught us that you grow to the site. So you don't grow to the trends. Mm-hmm. You want to grow the variety that is best matched to the site. So he had purchased even a little bit more land and developed it into Cabernet Sauvignon that was up on the hillsides. Mm-hmm. And then the valley floor, which is a little heavier soil, was much better suited for Merlot. Mm-hmm. And then he did have some Chardonnay planted. Dry Creek's a little too warm for Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. And so that has been replanted to Merlot. Merlot thrives best on that heavier soil. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the hillsides and the uplands are Zinfandel and Cabernet Sauvignon. We've also planted a little Petit Verdot, a little Cab Franc, mm-hmm. and then, of course, Petit Syrah. For blending into the Zinfandel. So we have about 100 acres total that we farm in Dry Creek Valley
now.
That's
a lot. Yeah, that's a good chunk of Dry Creek Valley.
Yeah.
So when did you begin to get involved? I mean, you grew up right in the valley and mm-hmm. around your grandparents and parents doing all this wine business stuff. Like, what were you thinking as a kid?
That's a good question. Probably wasn't thinking much.
You're thinking I'm going to go find a swimming hole.
Yeah,
horse,
exactly.
Where's
yeah.
my bike?
Yeah, I guess when you're raised out in, you know, the country like that, and you're involved in a business, a family business, you don't really think of it. It's just a way of life.
Yeah.
And you know, we're very fortunate. We had so much land to just, you know, explore with friends, ride our horses, ride our bikes, and we never were pressured into working or carrying on the family business. But when you're young and you want to do stuff, there was always a summer job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great, especially before you had a license. You always had a summer job, whether it was out in the vineyards or helping yeah. in the winery. You yeah. had a summer job and could earn some money. And growing up, you know, it was just, you know, that's what you did and you helped out. But I think, you know, once you get to 17, you're like, I need to get away. Like, yeah. you know, all teenagers are like, I'm done. I'm tired
world.
Of this.
Yeah.
I always wanted to stay in agriculture. My sisters and I, we did 4-H. So we were always involved with agriculture and learning and working off of the land. So going to Cal Poly was just a natural mm-hmm. for me to continue ag and study ag business. And marketing was my concentration. I knew I wanted to stay in the wine industry, but I thought, oh, I want to go into marketing and work for a different, you know, winery and a big winery. Mm-hmm. You know, I came from a small winery, small yeah. family. I wanted yeah. to do something bigger. Turn of events, actually ended up graduating and coming back.
Okay, well,
to the family business.
We're going to get more into that story yes. after a quick break here with Shelley Raffinelli. We are back in studio on The Good Stuff with Shelley Raffinelli of A. Raffinelli Winery. Winemaker and managing partner. But so you were starting to tell us how you went to Cal Poly to study agriculture and you wanted to stay in agriculture, but you took a marketing angle sort of to your studies and kind of like your post-college life. What was it about marketing that you liked?
It was just, they had a great marketing team down there and I wanted to see more of the business side, something that I hadn't done. I'd been in production. And that was the one thing that was crazy was that there was no marketing department at Raffinelli. So when, I came back and gave my resume to my dad, I was like, where do I fit in? Well, you're going right into production. And I think that was the greatest thing because it's very rewarding. We still, being a family business, you wear so many roles. Yeah. So you are marketing, your sales, your production, your general manager. Yeah, you do a little bit of everything. But it was, you know, I really enjoyed marketing. And to be able to apply a little bit of it all the time to the business is still a great thing. But being in production and actually seeing, you know, what you do out in the vineyard, bringing it all the way from grape to glass is truly rewarding. And hopefully I've brought some of that education from Cal Poly and what I learned back to the business. I changed up the way they kind of released the wines and handled their mailing list. But yeah, hopefully I brought something.
So brought some of that structure for
Exactly. Made it hopefully a little bit more efficient, a little easier to do.
So on the production side, was it hard, nerve-wracking the first time you drank the wine you made? Do you remember that experience?
Yes. And I think probably from my dad, you know, because it's one of those things where you're putting out a product that you're really passionate about, but it's going to be drank by so many different people and consumers, and you're just, you're kind of like, oh my God, are they going to like it? And what are they going to say about it? And no, not everyone's going to like it, but hopefully you're going to hit most everyone's palate positively. But again, you are seeking that approval from your father because you're, it's something that's been passed down. Four generations, and you're trying to carry on something and you hope that you do it right. So even though they had set the precedence and a very high standard, I think the responsibility of carrying that standard to that level was a little, you know, inundated, intimidating.
Right. Do you, I mean, with your kind of your marketing hat on, I mean, what is the trick to marketing something as, you know, authentic as a Raffinelli winery?
I mean, it's a good story.
You've got,
Good question, I should say. It's constantly changing right now. So I don't think there's one correct answer for it. Maybe 20, 30 years ago, yes. And that would have been to sell direct to your consumer, create a loyal customer that's going to come back and purchase your wine every year. Today, it's such a different landscape. I think as far as marketing goes, you are constantly pivoting, constantly adapting, and seeing what the newer and the next generation wants and is looking for. And it's a little bit of a challenge. My sister and I sit there and we're like, okay, how can we do this? It's so different than how my parents have done it. And then, of course, marketing, I don't even marketing really existed with my grandparents.
Right, now you're just trying to get people in the door.
So.
Yeah, but I mean, it's probably a really helpful thing to just be paying attention, to be just listening and watching what other people are doing.
And even acknowledging that it's changed is the first step in being able to reconnect or connect with people in this sort of new environment.
Absolutely. Yeah, so what we see is, as a family business, we're there every day and we are connecting with the consumer and the visitors that are coming there. So if we're not talking to everyone, we're still observing, you know, what's going on and, you know, what works and what doesn't work, and really connecting with the staff that's, you know, out there conversing with our consumer and booking the appointments and doing all that. And yeah, it's really being there and seeing what's going on in person.
Yeah, it's really important.
It's a whole new world. I've had a friend in town with her 15-year-old daughter, and I'm like, do you like the vineyard? She's like, it's great. I'm going to go out and do a bunch of Instagram posts showing off my outfit and how it looks with the backdrop of
exactly.
the vines.
Yes.
And I'm like, great. I'm like, we just need to make sure you're a future wine drinker. So go spend as much time in the vineyard. But I was just like such, I mean, it's, in, you know, 15, obviously, so not 21.
But you've got to start somewhere. If you at least acknowledge how beautiful the vineyards are.
It's a start.
Then hopefully, you'll come back and step into that.
And she's from Texas. So it's kind of like, your friends are probably not experienced vineyards. How cool is that? So anyway, paying attention.
Absolutely. And
we got to start them somewhere. You got to educate them. That's what we say. And we're very fortunate Genera Winery is right there, and you look at our hillside vineyards, and we encourage everyone, just go walk. Yeah. Just go walk out in the vineyard. And, you know, we're happy to tell you what's going on at this time of the year, because there's always something going on. There's always something to see, and it's so beautiful. Yeah. And I forget, even though it's my backyard,
I know.
I look at it, it's like, this is a lot of work, and I watch the seasons go by quicker and quicker. But to them, this is like, oh, it's so beautiful. And it really kind of slows you down and go, okay, make you appreciate it and see it through their eyes.
Take the breath and,
absolutely.
Yeah. I love that.
So Raffinelli is still very much a family business. So you're doing the winemaking. Do you work with your dad on that, or is he kind of retired, or?
He's really stepped away from the cellar and kind of given me full reign, which is awesome for him to trust me to do that. And so they're at the point where they're involved and they help out at the busier times, but they have a lot more flexibility. They're never going to retire. Yeah. No one ever retires in a multi-generational business.
Or even in farming.
Yeah, it's their identity. They couldn't. We encourage him to come over and talk to people on a everyday basis. He's got the stories. He's got the history down more so than I do. Yeah. And people love to make that connection to the third generation and what he has to say. And so my sister and I pretty much, you know, run the day-to-day operations. Mm-hmm. She'll be on the crush pad. She, you know, during harvest, she'll be the one who's handling the A-list and the sales and the distribution and the restaurants. Then I'm doing most of the production. But we have to work all together. And, you know, I say, your hat's constantly changing.
And then your husband has a role in the vineyards now.
Yes, he's great. Couldn't do it without him. And this is someone who I met in college and had no experience, came from a cattle background, had no experience in grapes or wine. I always tell people the first time I introduced him to Zinfandel, him and his college roommate, they made wine spritzers out of it with 7-Up. And he'll kill me for telling everyone about that. But you've got to start somewhere. Yeah. You know, at least, hey, you were drinking wine.
I kind of want to try that now, though, I'll be honest. I mean,
We could.
Yeah. But he's come a long way. He actually left college and came to work for my dad, and I was still at college. This was crazy. I was like, do not work for my dad. No, our relationship is never going to survive. It's the end. And he just was at a point where he's like, I don't know where I want to be with agricultural, you know, business degree. What do I want to do? Where's my focus? So he actually came and worked for my dad, and my dad threw him out in the vineyards with the vineyard crew,
And he survived.
And he survived, yes.
And then decided
and
that
still
was
surviving.
His life path, right? Like, wow.
Yeah, and everyone knows you cannot do it without good grapes. Yeah. And the great thing is that relationship is, he knows what we're looking for quality-wise. It's not about quantity, it's about the quality. And so we work together. So he knows what he needs to do because it's going into the bottle of the family business. Yeah.
Wow, what an amazing...
So what do you guys do together for fun that's not winemaking or on the vineyard? What's the escape?
We ride horses.
There you go.
So we compete on our horses. That's how we actually met in college, was college rodeo.
Oh,
so
lovely.
Kind of fun. Something non-wine related.
Were you a barrel racer?
Yes. Mm. Yeah, and he was a team roper. And... we still try to do that. We call ourselves weekend warriors, which is far and few between now. But that is our escape. And that is a little bit of a decompression, is just to take off a day or two and be on the horses. And
you have to do that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, we need to take another break. When we come back, we're going to open some wine.
And open some wine.
We're going to open some wine. Michelle Raffinelli. with Shelley Raffinelli, winemaker, managing partner, A. Raffinelli Winery, and talking a little bit off air about how your now husband survived his Raffinelli hazing days with your family and literally learning the ropes from the ground up. So now we should maybe talk about the wines that you're making.
And maybe try them.
And open one. You've brought us a beautiful Zinfandel and a beautiful Merlot. Maybe open the Merlot and tell us a little bit about it and some of the other things that you make.
Yeah, so there's the connection right there is we were known for Zinfandel. My dad introduced the Cabernet Sauvignon program in 83. And of course, when I came back, we had just... we're just bringing in a first year production of a new Merlot vineyard, and the quality looked phenomenal. And my husband's like, this is really good stuff. You should try your hand at it. And so I told my dad, I was like, I think I want to make a barrel of Merlot. And he looked at me like, you're crazy. What? So the Merlot was my program, kind of my baby that I brought on. Every generation has to add something. Yeah. They got to leave their mark.
Yes,
and so the Merlot was it. Unfortunately, it was very untimely because there was too much Merlot on the market by the time it was released and the movie came out, which, you know, finally the newer generations have not seen that movie. Don't need to see that movie.
No, don't need to name that movie.
But the Merlot has been fun. I love Bordeaux wines. I made it in a Bordeaux style, so I've beefed it up. I've blended some Cabernet in there, elevated it to a point where it's got such great structure and ageability that we call it the sleeper, because there's a lot of people that say, oh, I don't drink Merlot, or they're not impressed. And we have a great time convincing them, well, you have to try this style of Merlot. And I really think it shows off the versatility of the Merlot grape, known as, you know, it's a blender, but there's so much that you can do with it. And when, you know, you grow it, good quality, well-balanced, you know, you can make a really great wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead and open it if you'd like.
I love that.
Yeah, Carissa can't wait much longer.
I'm sorry. I'm
We've hit the wall.
Then she starts talking about
wine.
It.
Yeah, I know.
There it was.
Beautiful. Okay, so how many wines do you make on a given year?
So we have five.
Okay.
But that's just five labels. We make Zinfandel, that's what we're known for, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and then, of course, I had to go another step further, and I made an estate blend, which actually was my husband's birthday wine that I played with for quite a few years.
I love that.
And that's what every winemaker loves to do. They like to create and blend, right? So the estate blend is, that's exactly what it is. It's a blend. So you can play, you can put different varieties in there at different percentages and based on the type of year growing season you're having. Then I also did a sparkling off of the Chardonnay vineyard right before it was pulled out. We don't make any whites. We're a red house. So doing the sparkling was great because when I do winemaker dinners or have any kind of special events, you have something there for a starter. And I love French champagnes. That's my vice. So then, of course, I was like, oh, I got to do a sparkling. So I tried my hand at a sparkling and it didn't come out half bad. So I'm hoarding it because it's never to be, you know.
One and done.
Exactly. Although I did convince them to plant a few rows of Chardonnay. So there is the opportunity. It is coming into production. So we can't do it again. So
how do you sort of describe a Raffinelli wine to your customers or would-be customers? I mean, is there sort of a style that you like to kind of talk about?
Yes, I think what we find is we do have a very unique style of winemaking. It's very much an old world style. We do open top fermentation. We're one of the few that are still doing manual punch downs by hand. Unfined and unfiltered wines. So I think they're very true to their site and they're very reflective of the growing season and that winemaking style. But they're made in a fashion where we want them to be very balanced wines, very food friendly, because that's how we all grew up. Wine is on the table. It's part of the meal. And so it does need to be food friendly. And then we've earned a reputation on having ageable wines. So balance is the key. As far as the winemaker style, it's we're looking for that right balance every year. And so they have depth, the concentration. They're robust, but they're refined.
Yeah.
They're not fruit bombs. They're not in your face. When you pull them, you watch them evolve in the glass, and then you know that they're going to develop in the cellar over time. And that's what we're looking for, a wine that's going to change and get better with time, but nothing that's going to be over the top.
Right. Absolutely. And the age-worthiness, I think, is, has always been a mark of Ruffinelli, for sure.
Yeah, it's a little harder to convince people of today to wait when they ask, when should we be drinking this? And I'm like, oh, well, the sweet spot's 10 years. And they're like, oh, my God, that's way too long. I'm like, well, we can just decanter that. We could skip a few years.
Yeah. Or
let's
buy,
let it
or
open up.
Buy a 10-year-old wine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's good. I recommend being impatient.
Yeah.
Well, just buy two. You put one away and
exactly.
you drink one.
That's
right?
What you need to do. Exactly.
We unfortunately need to take another quick break, and we'll come back in a minute with Shelley Ruffinelli. Things up with our guest Shelley Ruffinelli and all these beautiful wines that you have brought here in studio, but that you're making. How can people come and taste them?
So we're available Wednesday through Monday by appointment, and we encourage people to come in, sit outside, take in the views, walk the vineyard. We love to show people the winery itself, walk them through the cellar, show them actually where the wine's made.
So cool.
But it's pretty simple. You would just go to our website and put in a request to come in for an appointment, or you can call. We're still a little bit old school, so we still try to get every phone call and return them the best we can. You know, we have a gate, but there's always someone there. There's always someone there.
Okay, and the website is aruffinelliwinery.com. We'll put it up on the show notes. What's the phone number? Because I don't think I have that here.
707-433-1385.
Amazing. I don't remember any phone numbers, so let's...
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad you remember yours.
Are you in my contacts?
Yeah. Like, right, exactly.
It's not in there.
Gone. And Instagram, follow at aruffinelliwinery. So do you have anything coming up that we should know about, or restaurants that carry your wines?
Yeah,
I mean, outside of Harvest, I'm trying to avoid
that's
that
all
subject.
That's on the mind. Yeah. It's like one day I look out, it's one purple berry, and the next they're all purple.
They're all purple, yeah. And it's time to go.
No, we just finished doing some panels, cab panels, and through Wine Growers. But we are actually toning it down, getting ready for Harvest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We kick back up in November. We'll be in Dallas doing a women winemaker dinner.
Great.
Actually, a couple in Dallas. And then we will head to New Orleans. To be part
fun.
Of Emeril Lagasse's Carnival.
Nice.
So that's really exciting.
She doesn't know she's going to kick up a little bit in September. We just haven't asked her yet.
Okay, yes.
She
won't be able to leave
she
studio.
She can't say no
until,
if I ask on air, right?
Is yeah. Like, no, I know. The pressure's on.
I know.
Other than that, we love, going out to dinner and encouraging people. You know, we have our wines at a lot of the local restaurants.
Yeah. And, I know I've tried them at Starks, yeah. Cabianca,
yeah,
Valette's, La Coco's,
Bocce.
Awesome. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, well, we need to get into our Tuesday Night Wines now before we run out of time. So, Shelley, you're our special guest. Tell us what you're going to be drinking on Tuesday night.
I'm going to have to crack out the Terrace Select. That's our very special Cabernet Sauvignon, 100%, grown right on the hillside there at the winery. And we sit on it for about 5 years before we release it. So it's a beautiful wine. So I spoil myself, but that's what you do in wine country.
Yeah. Why wait?
It's called Drink the Good Stuff.
That's right.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, I was intrigued with the blend because I think blends are really, really fun. So I'm going to do, I think your current vintage is the 22 Estate blend. So I'm going to do that. And it's primarily Cabernet and some Merlot and a little Petit Verdot.
Yep.
So Harrison, you take us home.
I'm going old school. I'm doing a Abe Raffinelli's Zinfandel from Dry Creek Valley. I think the 23, which I'm looking at a bottle from right now.
So basically that means that bottle's going home with you.
It's got a little bit of Petit Sirah. I'm going to share it. I think that would make a perfect Tuesday night wine and any night wine. So thank you so much, Shelley, for being here. Good luck with Harvest. People go visit araffinelliwinery.com, and from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.
Cheers.